Hi, everybody. This is Lauren Baker from Search Engine Journal, and welcome to today's Search Engine Journal show. With me, I have Dwayne Brown from Take Some Risk Incorporated, and we're going to be talking about Google Shopping. Hey, Dwayne, how's it going?
It's great, Lauren. How are you doing?
Good. Really good. Nice to have you on today. I've been following you on Twitter for a while, and thank you so much because I have so many Google Shopping questions, and I think our audience does too. You seem to be the go-to person on everything Google Shopping oriented.
Yeah, I mean, I love Google Shopping. I love e-commerce. So, I mean, if you're into those two things, shopping is your best friend these days.
Good, good. And, you know, I'm enjoying a cup of coffee because I like to like have a cup of coffee in the afternoon while I'm doing these shows. But we were just discussing, you're not a coffee or a tea drinker at all, correct?
That is correct. Juice, water, sometimes some chocolate milk if it's like in the store and I feel in the mood for it. But yeah, I just never got into coffee. I don't like the taste of it. I don't really need it because I go to bed pretty early and I wake up pretty early. I'm a morning person.
Nice. Nice. I tried quitting coffee once for like 3 months. And for the first month, I had migraines every day because I guess I've been drinking it for like 20 years now every morning or whatever. So I've quit a lot of things in my life. And coffee was the hardest to quit. And obviously, I did not quit it 100% because I started drinking it again. So, wow. And no like cordyceps or mud water or anything like that in the morning, just straight to the juice.
Juice. I don't even know what cordyceps are, but yeah, no, just juice or water if I don't have any juice in the house for some reason. Nice. Or smoothie potentially. Like I'll get a smoothie. There's a couple places near me.
I read a couple studies about how apple juice helps to really wake up the system. There's something within apples or apple juice that almost acts almost like a caffeine would for your body as well.
I can see that. Apple juice is awesome. I mean, fresh apple juice is just like the best thing in the world. Put some like ginger in there. And
oh, yeah.
Your day going.
Yep. I agree. And ginger has that bite, right? It kind of wakes you up a little bit too. So besides your beverages of choice, how about if you tell our audience a little bit about yourself?
Totally. So I run an agency, like you said, called Take Some Risk. You know, we're based in Canada, but all of our clients are American, UK, European based. We're running advertising. And about 95% of our clients are e-commerce or direct consumer brands. We're running ads in North America, Europe, APAC, and just really helping them figure out how do we build, you know, a profitable business. You know, a lot of our clients aren't VC backed or have money from, you know, outside investors. And so, you know, for them, every dollar really does count. You know, unlike maybe some VC brands that talked about profitability in the last 6 months, we've been talking about profitability for the last 6 years because our clients have to be profitable. They can't afford to lose $1,000 in every purchase if you're a mattress company hoping you'll make it back on the back end, because there is no back end when you run out of money in the bank account.
Gotcha. And the beauty about Google Shopping is that you can get your products right then and there, right in front of people that are looking, right? So that's pretty cool that you have that specific niche. Do you do advertising outside of Google Shopping as well, like with normal Google ads, or do you focus specifically on Google Shopping?
Yeah, so we're a media agnostic agency. So, you know, outside of shopping, we do obviously search ads. Google has YouTube ads, discovery ads. Obviously, we do stuff with Microsoft because Microsoft and Google make up the biggest in terms of search engines. And then even beyond that, we've got clients running ads on, you know, Facebook, Instagram, Snap, and TikTok. You know, right. So we try to really figure out, you know, what platform is the best based on who the client's going after. You know, we don't always think, oh, Facebook is the best one. We don't always think that, oh, Google's the best one, because maybe they're not. It really depends on what the client's trying to sell and where their customers spend their time.
You know, what's interesting is that, so, you know, Google product ads, people kind of already know what they're looking for, right? And they're going and they're searching for whatever it may be. Maybe it's like a head balm, like post-shave head balm, right? Or something like that, right? But if I'm on Insta, like now that you're talking about it, like Insta or Snap or TikTok, that's where things are being pushed towards me, either based upon my user behavior, my search behavior, things that I've liked, things that I looked at, things that I shared, things that I've maybe chatted with someone about. How do you find like, is there ways to connect those campaigns, and is there one that you enjoy working on some more so than the other, or anything that's really exciting you in any of those spaces right now when it comes specifically to product?
Yeah. You know, I think with Google's discovery ads, you see them taking almost a very, you know, sort of paid social, Facebook, TikTok, Instagram approach, and that like you need to change the creative more often. And I think with the launch globally out of beta of Performance Max or PMax over the last, you know, 6 or 7 months, you know, that creative needs to be changed a lot more frequently. I think that's a big change that a lot of maybe paid search marketers aren't used to. We used to write ad copy. If it's amazing, that ad copy might run for 3 months, 6 months, a year, right? And before it needs to be changed potentially. Whereas now with, you know, creative where it's images or video, the frequency with which you need to change is increased. I think that's a really interesting development, I think, from the page search side. You know, I think when it comes to paid social, I was talking with a friend about this yesterday, actually, and how, you know, Facebook is very different than, you know, TikTok. You know, Facebook wants to show you more things based on what you already said you like. So I like street food when it's being made in like some foreign country. So Facebook will show me more street food being made in foreign country, mm-hmm. you know, whereas like TikTok is more saying, here's everything that's on our platform and here's what we think you're going to be interested in. You know, they don't try to show you a dozen things you already said you liked that are similar to what you liked before. So I think those two platforms are very different. And in that way that they also, I think, attract different kinds of people. You know, I think that's why you sort of see maybe more young people stick with TikTok. And even people, you know, in their 30s and 40s do use TikTok, obviously. But I think it definitely caters to younger because there's more of that, like, choose your own adventure style to TikTok versus yeah. Facebook is just like, here's another things you think you'll like because you like this one other thing that was similar. You know, I may like chocolate, but I don't need to see 6 chocolate ads or 6 chocolate videos if I'm on Facebook or Instagram.
I the first time I experienced TikTok was before it rebranded, when it was Musical.ly. Mm-hmm. And my niece, who was, I think, in elementary school at the time, all of the kids in elementary school were on Musical.ly and doing, you know, basically like lip syncing the videos. And I'm like, what is this? But then it got me thinking, because around the same time, there was an article that I think a high school student wrote, like, we're not on Facebook. Like, that was basically the theme of the article. Like, Facebook is not the future. The future is everything else that's not Facebook. And I remember, like, a lot of Facebook marketers getting very defensive. That article went extremely viral. I can't remember where it was published. I want to say Wired or somewhere else. I'll have to look. Mm-hmm. But, and then, like, here we are. Like, you know, now, like, we're not just talking about two companies. Like, of course, Instagram and Instagram is part of Meta, and Facebook is Meta, and WhatsApp is Meta. And, yeah. But then we also have all of these other platforms and formats. Before we get too far into our interview, we wanted to just thank you for listening to the Search Engine Journal show. We're going to take a quick break and bring you a little word from our sponsor. Do you need to improve your website's performance? Then get the speed you deserve with InMotion Hosting. InMotion Hosting provides fast and reliable website hosting for businesses of any size, all backed by 24/7 customer support and the industry's best money-back guarantee. Trust your website to the web hosting experts at InMotionHosting.com. Again, that's InMotionHosting.com. Now back to our show.
So how do you really stay on top of like what's emerging in these markets? And is there anything emerging that makes sense into bringing into what you're doing with your clients right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on obviously what you sell, but augmented reality is super interesting. I think you see a lot more brands trying to do that. Even Google Marketing Live today talked a little bit about that. You know, I think brands are all just trying to figure out how to navigate this. You know, I think the one thing brands maybe should think about is like they don't need to be everywhere online. You know, trying to be everywhere online, I think, just ends up either spreading your budget too thin or your time too thin, and often you don't have unlimited time and unlimited budgets. You know, it's hard to stay on top of everything. I will not lie. So, you know, part of it's, you know, newsletters, part of it's our agency Slack group, part of it's, you know, Reddit, Twitter, and try to just keep up as much as you can. But, you know, we've had so much change, especially in the Google end of things in the last, you know, 12 to 18 months, whether it's launching Performance Max or them saying they're going to sunset Universal Analytics and you have to use GA4. To them go into like a privacy first even more and doing enhanced conversions. And so it definitely is hard to keep up with everything, but it's just we read as much as we can as an agency. We share articles as a team because we kind of run our agency kind of like a sports team in that like everyone knows that like we're always as strong as our weakest link. And so everyone's job is to help support everyone. And that includes like what's out there in terms of information, you know, webinars, videos we think we should attend. You know, obviously we've got amazing Google reps as we do with Facebook and stuff, and they help us keep atop of what's going on as well. But I'm sure there's things we miss and we just accept that. Because rarely is anything announced that like you've got to do it tomorrow. Usually it's like in the next 6 months, in the next year. So if we miss something, it'll get reannounced or, you know, relaunched.
And you're based in Toronto.
That is correct. Yeah.
And, you know, Shopify's from Toronto, right?
They're from Ottawa, actually.
Really? I thought they were from Ontario.
I mean, Ottawa is in Ontario. So Ottawa is our nation's capital. So it is Ontario. It's just they're actually based and started in Ottawa. And then obviously their biggest office is in Toronto because everybody wants to like live and work in Toronto and Canada.
Right.
And they've got offices obviously in Montreal and in Vancouver, Canada as well. But I think they also gave up their Ottawa office recently, if I read the news correctly, because they're going that whole digital first where offices are more of a option thing versus a have to do thing. But yeah, Shopify is Canadian and they got launched in Ottawa, which is our nation's capital. So much like Washington, D.C. for Americans or, you know, London for, you know, British people watching.
And I'm going to be in Toronto next month. I think we're probably going to meet up. How's the vibe there? Because to me, it sounds like Toronto is what the Bay Area was 15 years ago.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably a good comparison or analogy. You know, I think the challenge in Canada, and this always makes my friends abroad, whether it's in America, UK, or Europe laugh, is we're kind of like a walled off country in that like we've only got like 5 banks, when we have like 3 telecoms, and we don't like outside competition. So at times things can be a bit behind behind other countries in terms of innovation. Like we don't let other outside competition come in when it comes to like banking and telecoms and stuff. And so those things are maybe not as progressive as what you'd see maybe in America or in the UK or even in Australia at times. But we do have a really good tech scene because we've got some of the best universities, especially for engineering around the world. And so lots of big companies will open offices here in Toronto or somewhere in Canada because they want access to our engineering talent, especially those people who maybe didn't want to move to America, move to the UK or something like that. So it's a great scene. You know, we're not a huge country at, you know, 30, 35 million people, but we do pump out a really, really smart set of like engineering students from a few different universities that a lot of tech companies want to hire.
This is true. So let's get into Merchant Center a little bit. Google Shopping and Merchant Center. Why is it important? And why should e-commerce, D2Cs, and then also like people that are maybe running SEO campaigns for those companies get involved as well?
Yeah. So your Merchant Center is more like a tool or a hub. It's where you like have your information stored for your shopping feed. So think of it kind of like a hard drive, you know, more or less. And so you use it to run your campaigns. So in a sense, it's the place where your data is stored. And then there are, you know, beta programs and features you can opt into inside of your Merchant Center. You know, I'm not really sure why Google decided to build Merchant Center versus trying to bake it into Google Ads. Maybe they had this long vision where they'd have Merchant Center serve all these different functions in the future. But if you're going to run shopping ads, whether it's paid shopping ads or you want to be on the shopping tab, which is free, then you definitely need a Merchant Center so you can have a place to store your data. There might be a future where Google maybe has it all happen inside of Google Ads, but right now you do need a Merchant Center and it makes the most sense, especially if you're going to run in shopping campaigns in tons of different countries and you have different ad accounts as well.
And is there organic SEO value to accessing Merchant Center as well? Because it's always been, actually, this is a point of contention with me and a PPC, one of my clients, like Merchant Center gives like free clicks, right? And I'd be like, oh, they're free. They're not paid. So like, we're going to count that as organic. And then the PPC is like, no, that's because we're running the PPC campaign. So then that gets filled in when people are searching and then Google is just not charging. It's still PPC, but it's free PPC. So how does that work? Like how do you typically track that and the whole like the free clicks component and then like the other tests that, because like last year before the holidays, during the holiday shopping time, like Q4, it was like almost every day there was a different form of Google Shopping being served, sometimes in the ads, sometimes you know, around the knowledge panel or shopping panel area, and sometimes just like inserted in the results themselves, which really blew me away. How do you usually track the differences, and do you think that SEO should be involved with accessing that Google Merchant Center data, or even just being exposed to it and learning from it?
Having been exposed to it is great. I mean, even as, you know, paid agency, like we get access to Google Search Console, you know, even though it's not a paid thing. And I think getting access is really important. You know, when it comes to the shopping tab and free clicks, which is how, you know, Google Shopping started, you know, over 10 years ago, back in, you know, 08, 09, 2010, you know, shopping ads were free is how Google built the product. You know, yeah, it's been, you know, more than a decade now. And so, you know, from my point of view, I don't think the shopping tab is necessarily a paid product because you're not paying for the clicks. Whether, you know, we set it up or someone else sets it up, you know, I don't really care as an agency, but I think someone needs to set it up and manage it to make sure that it is working. So we opt in all our clients into it because most of our clients usually don't have, you know, internal person, or they won't necessarily have it already set up. And so we'll set it up because it's like, if it's free clicks, you know, even if you only got 100 clicks a month for free, but that translated into 4 or 5 or 10 sales, you know, why wouldn't you take it, right? Yes, right. There's the work to build the feed, but we're already building the feed for paid ads, so it's not really that much work, you know, our point of view. We wouldn't try to take the free clicks in part of our program because we're not paying for a click. I think that's kind of a bit disingenuous because there's no, like, ad spend behind it. Because then if something happens and those results tank, then how do you explain that, right? Because you can't really control the shopping tab beyond, like, you opted into it. Here's my shopping feed, Google. Now you need to do the rest. You know, I think the shopping tab definitely needs some more work around how it works, because often the complaint from a paid ad perspective is like, my client's annoyed or my boss is annoyed because we have our shopping feed, but how we actually show in the shopping tab doesn't make sense. Or we have things spelled out a certain way in our shopping feed and we're not able to have certain filters show up for our products. And so I think the shopping tab is still, you know, a work in progress product in a lot of ways. So that there's more alignment between like how you can filter and show up and what you actually have in your shopping feed.
You know, what I've found, because I probably do about 90% organic and 10% paid, is that I find that when I'm in within Merchant Center and I'm going through the reporting and the analytics, whenever I see Google doing something like maybe not approving an ad because of the image, or maybe not approving the ad because of like some other issue, that's really helpful for me as an SEO, especially with some projects that I work on where the image may, let's say, for example, the lingerie space, right?
Yeah.
The image may not be approved because of the AI thinking that something is something that it's not. So then we're like, oh, maybe let's test another image. So that's when it gets into, hey, are we also breaking the barriers on the SEO side? Because we know that's a specific space that Google is not, I don't want to say cracking down on, but trying to segment user interest based upon user age, perhaps, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe that's an image, since it's not accepted via Google Shopping, and we know that that's against Google ad terms, we can switch out on the site. It may also help us with organic, because perhaps Google may be filtering that from an organic perspective, because all of that same similar data is utilized within Google image search at the same time, right? So it's kind of like there are some very interesting touch points along the way there too. Have you noticed, are there any specific feed management tips that you can give for anyone that's currently managing a Google Shopping campaign and wants to optimize their campaign?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I say at all conferences and anywhere I go, and I feel like a broken record, but I know it's really important, is like, you need to manage your shopping feed, right? You can do whatever you want in your Google ad account, but if you have a poor shopping feed, it doesn't matter what you almost do in your ad account, right? Your feed is almost more important. You know, it's like if you shoot video, you know, garbage in, garbage out. If you shoot a garbage video, you can't edit it to the Oscars, right? You're not getting the Oscars, right? If you have a garbage shopping feed, you're not going to have an amazing campaign. You might do okay. You might break even, maybe you get lucky and be profitable. But if you want to have really outstanding results, then you need to have a better shopping feed. You know, as an agency, we use a tool called Feedonomics to help manage our client shopping feeds, because some of our clients have, you know, tens to hundreds of thousands of SKUs. And so at scale, automation is really important. But if you can't afford Feedonomics or another tool like that, you know, you can look at using rules in Google Merchant Center. So you set up rules to help you manage the feed. If, you know, title contains the word man, you know, label this Google product category as X, or label this gender category as X. So set up rules are really helpful.
Right.
You can obviously use a Google Sheet to do your shopping feed if you don't have tons of products, like you only have 50 SKUs or something like that. But really making sure you try to fill out as many of the attributes as possible is really important. And really think about how people search for your product. I think the mistake people sometimes make is they'll just pull in whatever title for the SKU or their product on their product page into their shopping feed as their product title. But you want your product title to represent how someone searches for a product. So the example I always use is if I'm looking for, you know, Nike shoes or Puma shoes and they're red. Well, if I'm looking for Nike Puma red sneakers, you know, I want things like Nike Puma, you know, red, if they're men's shoes or unisex or women's shoes, the gender of the shoes. I want the size in the product title. So I want those descriptive things people are going to search for. So I have a better chance to rank for that SKU when someone does a search, whether it's, you know, Puma red shoes or men's Puma red shoes or men's Puma red shoes size 9. That's, I think, one thing people don't always realize. And then on top of that, let's say you've got a product title that's like 200 characters and you know the limit's 150 characters. Well, taking those extra 50 characters that you can't fit in your product title and put them in your product description, you know, Google looks at your whole shopping feed beyond your product title. And so having extra keywords you want to rank for in your product description is really helpful to make sure that you can rank for the things that are really valuable for you. You know, and then beyond that, it's just filling out every attribute that makes sense, you know, size, color, gender, pattern, material, in your shopping feeds, so that way you build a better shopping feed than your competition. Because if you build a better shopping feed than your competition, you stand a better chance of ranking. You know, Google announced a couple years ago that you don't have to fill out things like, you know, age, gender, color in your shopping feed. But if you don't fill it out and your competition does, you often get ranked with a tier 2 status, i.e. their ads might show ahead of yours because they have a better built shopping feed. And so we've always stressed to our clients, and sometimes they don't love us for this, that like our shopping feed is number one. We'll do the work other people won't want to do, which is work on the shopping feed because it's tedious and boring. So it's work on your shopping feed. I don't care who you're talking to. You could be talking to someone from Google, quite frankly. If they told you not to work on your shopping feed, I'd call them a liar. Your shopping feed is the most important thing you could work on, and it sets you apart from your competition because most people are not going to work on it, right? It's a bit tedious and it's a bit boring. But it's a tedious, boring work that gets you ahead when it comes to shopping, whether it's the shopping tab, paid ads, you know, and want to be on SERP.
Or schema, right? Because we want to make sure that what we're serving schema from, when we're serving Google from a schema perspective and a markup perspective, pretty much matches. I mean, it's all the same source typically at the end of the day, right? Because it's pulling it all from Shopify. Shopify or BigCommerce or Magento or WooCommerce or whatever your platform of choice. So would you consider that to be a Google Shopping ranking factor to make sure that all of your all of the attributes are filled in as they should be?
If you're talking about like from a schema perspective, I'd say yes. I mean, Google uses this information to understand like what your products are, and Google even has, you know, automatic improvements in GMC. So you can say like, if your price is wrong in your feed because you update in your site, Google will try to update your feed with a new price. Or if a product becomes in stock that's out of stock on your feed, they'll try to update your feed with in stock. And so having the schema information on your site is really valuable because it allows Google a better chance to read what's on your website and make sure that your website and your shopping feed are updated. And so, yeah, I'd say it's a ranking factor because people shop by price, right? If we're entering a recession, people are more price conscious than ever. And so having a better price, which is part of your ranking factor for shopping, is really important if you want to get ahead of your competition, outside of obviously having the best shopping feed possible.
That reminds me. So Google Shopping also tracks shipping and shipping times and delivery times.
Yep.
Correct?
Yeah.
So like that's all synced in. That's the interesting thing about Shopify and Shop is that Google will track how long it actually takes the package to get from the time the person orders to the shipping agent, like if UPS or FedEx or USPS or DHL or whatever, and then to the house. Like they actually track that and they keep that data and it's available within Merchant Center. Yep. So how important is that data for Google at the end of the day?
You know, they only launched Scorecard a few months ago. I think it's back in February of 2022. Mm-hmm. But I think it's pretty important, right? Google realizes, and we all realize, you know, if your shipping costs are too high, if your return costs are too high, if your return policy isn't great, if your customer service isn't great, you know, these are essentially the three factors Google looks at, or four factors that Google looks at when it comes to your scorecard in GMC. And they realize that merchants that have a better rating for, you know, shipping time and cost and return rate and all that, odds are more people are going to buy from them, right? So Google's trying to figure out how do we show more stores, whether it's big or small brands, that more people will click on, that more people will purchase from, that will allow them to have a better experience. And so, you know, we're lucky that a lot of our clients, think and focus heavily on customer service and the return policy and their shipping time and everything. That isn't something you focus on. You want to focus on it because it becomes more and more important for Google to realize that, like, if you've got a better shipping experience than your competition, you know, that's probably going to get you to rank a lot better on top of having a better shopping feed at the end of the day.
Right. Which like totally goes beyond the site experience, right? Like that goes, that's the warehouse. That's the merchandising experience. So that goes way beyond anything on like the technical side, which really blew me away. Like we go, when we talk about like usability, a lot of the time we're talking about like what the front end website is, but this is complete. This is so back end. It's out of the warehouse, right? It's just that is just crazy.
It's like the post click experience because it's not just the purchase. It's like after the purchase has happened.
I know. And how many returns are coming back? Like that is just like, that is insane. And ultimately I do believe since Merchant Center is a hybrid of organic and shopping, that may be used in the future for organic results as well as shopping ads. So keep an eye on that, folks and listeners and viewers. Make sure that when someone orders, that stuff is out of the warehouse quickly as possible, because that's going to become a factor. To your point, Dwayne, you had said that, you know, people are looking for pricing, right? We're also all spoiled. You know, I remember when I was a kid, you'd see like a Sesame Street record ad on TV commercial, and we'd order it and it would say, oh, up to 4 to 6 weeks shipping COD. So you just like wait for the UPS person to show up at your door one day and hope it comes. Now we're all spoiled with Prime. Like if something's not here the next day, like especially like you're in Toronto, right? Like you probably expect something to be there the next hour when you order it, right? So like if something is going to take a week for me, I'm just like, no, I don't want it anymore. I'm going to get it from a different location. I'm going to get it from a different source. So that information has to be incredibly important with the customer decision journey.
It is, yeah. And people care about that. I mean, I don't personally mind waiting for a week. Like I've not bought from Amazon in probably 3 years. Like for me, if it's going to take a week, it takes a week. I try to buy from like smaller retailers and Canadian brands. And so sometimes things do take longer and I'll pay for shipping. But yeah, there are lots of people who, if it's going to take a week, they don't want it. If it's not going to be here tomorrow or the next day, or they've got to pay for shipping, you know, they don't want it. They'd rather pay a higher price for the product and have you build in the shipping costs than pay for shipping separately, because psychologically it looks like they're paying more, even though in reality they're actually not paying more. Mm-hmm. But your customer service is definitely more important today, especially if you go into a recession, right? Like customer service is how you retain customers, right? It's so much easier to retain your customer that you just acquired through whatever channel it is than for you to go out and find a new customer at the end of the day. And so retention is just becoming a bigger thing. And Google realizes, you know what, if we want to have people with better experience, we need to think about retention as well, which, you know, I'm happy about because our clients care about that stuff.
That's good. That's good. Retention is very, very important, right? So I love that, because we do tend to focus, especially like in the paid and the SEO world, we tend to focus on that first sale. If we can turn that first sale into subscribe and save, boom, got that done. If we can maintain that subscribe and save from the lifetime value, are there any good Shopify or any good apps that you would recommend for measuring customer lifetime value that are an easy add-on for maybe a smaller e-commerce or a medium-sized e-commerce company?
There was one we were looking at the other day and I can't remember what it was called. And it had LTV in the name. Some clients were trying to look for it. You know, but the other thing you can always look at doing, obviously, is like just pull your Shopify data and look at like, you know, how many people order and how often they order. A tool we do use is called Triple Whale. So they have like an LTV lifetime value calculator built in the app, and they pull in all our data from like Shopify and Google Analytics and Google Ads and help you calculate that. But there is an app we're going to add just specifically for Shopify, because not every client, you know, either has a use case for Triple Whale because they just started or doesn't make sense for them right away. But there are a few apps out there that definitely do that, because it's definitely a need. You know, I think one thing we do that's maybe a little bit different than a lot of agencies is, yes, we focus on getting you that first customer, but we also look at running ads to go after people who've already purchased and get them to come back and make their second purchase and third purchase. So if I know little Johnny purchased a pair of jeans, I know that he's most likely going to purchase a hoodie next, or he's going to purchase, you know, underwear. Well, let's show him ads for a hoodie or underwear or something else, so we can get back for that second purchase. I mean, yes, we're going to spend a bit of paid money, but it'll be far cheaper than we would have spent to acquire a net new customer. And that's really, as you all know, how you build a business, right? It's that second purchase, that third purchase, that fourth purchase.
Well, you turn them from a customer to a brand loyalist, right?
That's the goal. That's the dream, right?
That is the dream. That is the dream. Awesome. So also one thing I was just thinking of too is how important are tools like Nasto and Just Uno and other upsell or shopping cart abandonment or personalization tools to this whole ecosystem of shopping, to what you do from a paid perspective and to your clients from an overall sales perspective and growing their companies?
Yeah, I mean, upsells, cross sells are definitely important for any business. I think as long as you're at a certain scale, i.e., you know, maybe you're at $500,000 a year, $1 million a year, right? Because you want enough consistent customers coming in the door that you can use a tool like that. You know, if you don't have a consistent amount of customers coming in, it probably doesn't make sense to try to upsell and cross sell people just yet, because you don't have enough data to know that people who buy X also buy Y. But if you can increase your average order value from, you know, $60 to $80, from $80 to $100, you know, that makes everything a lot easier. It's, you know, cheaper to acquire customers in the long run because it's a lot easier for you to be profitable. Obviously, you make more money because now you're making, you know, $100 versus $80 before. So upsells and cross sells are something we talk about with clients. You know, we try to really be a business-focused agency in the sense that we think about that post-click experience on the client's website. We don't deal with things like after the purchase happens, so i.e. the warehouse and stuff like that. We may talk about with a client because they might have warehouse issues and we have to pull back on spend, but we definitely think about things on the website because, you know, our job isn't just to get the click, our job is to get the sale. And that means we want to remove as much friction from clients' websites as we can, because not all our clients are business people. Some of our clients are very creative people and they fell into what they sell. And so they need help from that business perspective of like, how do I build, you know, a better website that is like table stakes are really good. So, you know, cross sells, upsells, you know, having images or video on your product pages, having copy that actually speaks to the brand, you know, telling people why they should buy their product, right? Lots of sites tell you like what a product is or maybe the benefits, but they don't tell me why I should spend $150 on these pair of sweats versus just going to like Target and buying them for, you know, $20.
Yeah, there's a pair of basketball shorts from a company called John Elliott that's been hitting me up on Instagram for like the past year, and I'm trying to justify paying like $180 for a pair of basketball shorts that have this like kabuki, it's called their kabuki style, like this blend on them. But man, it is so tough. I'm just waiting for that stuff to go on clearance. Actually, I get that ad all the time. But to your point, the one thing besides being a work of art that they don't do is actually explain why it's worth that price. Is it limited? Is it something that is it a work of art? Do I get something with that? Do I get an NFT with it? Who knows? Like,
does it make you better at playing sports potentially? Right?
I'm not going to play sports. I'm not going to play basketball on a pair of $200 basketball shorts. I'll tell you that much. I probably won't even sit down with them on. but yeah. So it's kind of crazy. So, you know, past couple episodes of the show, and I think a lot of what we've been talking about, even in the world of SEO now, is really about feeds, right? We have Microsoft with Index Now, which we know. Hey, Mark, one of my old clients just, hey, Mark, how's it going? Just chimed in with a question on LinkedIn. So we're going to get to that in a second. But we have where was I?
Shopping feeds, really important.
We have Schema. We have feeds. We have Index Now. So Microsoft, DuckDuckGo, Yahoo, AOL, and Google experimentation to a degree is looking into Index Now, the ability for a website to serve and ping the engine when a change is made, as opposed to the engine trying to crawl and figure that out. We have Schema, where you're delivering specific information, and then if that information is wrong, Google Search Console is going to send you an email telling you that it's wrong. Like, and then we have everything that you're doing on the shopping side and the ad side. It's all feed based. So do you see this all kind of coming together? It's just, Why do you think the engines are going in that direction?
Because the internet's a lot bigger than it was 20 years ago, right? I mean, it was easy to crawl the internet 20 years ago. you didn't have what I assume now are billions and billions of websites out there. And so if we can tell them when we've updated a website, it probably makes their life easier, because let's say only 50% of websites are updated on a monthly basis or a weekly basis. Well, that's probably less work to crawl those than to crawl every website to see if they've been updated, because there's just so many websites out there. I think also Google and tech companies, they try to put a lot of, you know, a lot of work on us, so to speak, so on humans. So if they can put a bit of the work on us, it probably makes their lives easier because it saves them a bit of money, right? Back in the day, yep. You used to add a location to Foursquare so you can like check into a place. Well, that's putting a bit of work on the people, right? Or you put reviews on Google, you know, so I put reviews. Now you know this place is correct. And I've like updated the listing to say that it does have credit cards and it does take music. So I think it's just tech companies trying to put a bit of onus on people because it makes their lives easier to save them some money in the long run.
I miss Foursquare. Foursquare was so like cool. It was like the, felt like you were like, Foursquare was so OG and so in, like when it rebranded the Swarm or whatever. Oh, that was it. And Foursquare ads were cool too. I guess Google pretty much knows where you are anyway, or all of these apps know where you are anyway, because they're on your phone.
So, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. I'm going, you don't have to check in anymore. And by the way, before we get into our question and answer session, with our live audience. So if you're watching right now, and if you do have a question for Dwayne, please feel free to enter it into your YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, or even, I think you can even do this on Twitter. We'll see it on our end and I can show it right here on the screen. So before we get into the Q&A session, it's mailbag time, Dwayne. So SDJ mailbag is brought to you by InMotion Hosting. For dedicated WordPress hosting, In Motion is where you need to go. So check them out. And that includes WooCommerce. So let's take our first question. Let's take a question from Mark. I'm not sure if it's going to be your first or our last, but let's get into it. So Mark asks, what would your merchant center suggestion for a motorcycle or off-road vehicle dealership be? Google's car dealer program doesn't accept motorcycles and ATVs, but merchant center seems to have a bias against products that don't ship and must be bought at a dealership itself. Any tips there for Mark, or any suggestions on how to work with Google Merchant Center that way? That's a really interesting scenario. So I'm surprised to hear that you can't ship ATVs or all-terrain vehicles at all. But any suggestions there for Mark?
Yeah, I mean, that's a hard one. I mean, definitely Google wants items that you can like ship through the mail. So even though you probably could put an RTV or an ATV on some sort of flatbed and ship it across the country, it'd probably be really expensive and not within Google's wheelhouse. I mean, obviously, if you were the dealer who made the ATVs, Google has what they call their manufacturer center. So it's like the merchant center, but it's for manufacturers to put all their data up into Google. But I think if you're like a dealer, much like a car dealership, being able to use GMC is not a thing right now. Google does have car ads that you want to do. They do have things like hotel ads, but I think Google will eventually merge in car ads and hotel ads into Shopping because it's an easier format to use. I just don't think we're at the point where Google's going to merge in car ads and hotel ads just yet.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of the SEJ Show, which is made possible by this little break and a word from our sponsors. Do you need to improve your website's performance? Then get the speed you deserve with InMotion Hosting. InMotion Hosting provides fast and reliable website hosting for businesses of any size, all backed by 24/7 customer support and the industry's best money-back guarantee. Trust your website to the web hosting experts at InMotionHosting.com. Again, that's InMotionHosting.com. Now back to our show. Unfortunately, Google Merchant Center does allow for furniture ads, which, speaking from experience, are supposed to be shipped, but can take up to 6 months or a year to be shipped. So the irony is that some products which can take forever to be shipped or may never be shipped for you are available, whereas motorcycles or off-road vehicles are not. You seem to be was it manufacturer center, you said, Dwayne?
Yeah, so Google has Google Manufacturer Center, so it's where manufacturers can upload their data if they're the one who actually make the product. But if you're a dealer, You can't use Manufacturer Center because you don't actually make the product. You know, I bought my couch actually recently online, and they shipped it to me, I don't know, 3 months later. Mm-hmm. But I think because you can use like Canada Post or USPS or FedEx to ship the couch or furniture is what separates it maybe from motorcycles. Because at least I don't think you'd use USPS or Canada Post for motorcycles.
Yeah,
which is unfortunate.
I'm really interested, Mark. If you're still on, you don't ship at all. Like you can't ship from the. From the showroom to the location, like in a local area, or you're dealing with multiple different dealers across the US. We'll let Mark chime in. And then if anyone else has any questions, let us know. That's really good information though on the Google Manufacturer Center side though, Dwayne. Are there any other tips, tricks, or techniques that you'd like to discuss today before we kind of sign off?
Yeah, I thought we could talk a little bit about, I think, rank and factor when it comes to shopping. I think that's often misunderstood by people in general. You know, I think because search ads are just so different than shopping ads, people often think that, like, if I get search ads, I can get shopping ads. But what people often don't realize is beyond your shopping feed, things like your product price point is a rank and factor. You want to have the cheapest price. But as an example, I always give, let's say you sold a product for like $80, but then you add shipping for another $30. So your total price point with shipping is 110. If your competitor sells their product for $100 with free shipping, odds are they would rank higher than you because their total price with shipping is a lot cheaper than yours. Hmm. So understanding like your price point and where you are versus your competition is really important. Even though Google doesn't exclusively say that they count shipping, I'm pretty sure they count their shipping costs when they look at price point. Because depending on what the retailer is, shipping costs can totally blow the cost of the total purchase price when you get to checkout versus another competitor. Yeah. And so really understanding where you compete from a price point, having the best shopping fee, and then obviously making sure your bids are realistic if you're going to use, you know, standard shopping and not smart bidding is how you rank today. And understanding those three columns, I guess you want to say, is really important if you want to rank. It's not a question of just having the highest bid, as some people sometimes think.
Right. So let's go over those ranking factors one more time.
Yeah, sure.
If you wouldn't mind real quickly, let's just recap.
Yeah. So you've got your shopping feed is number one. So you want to build the best shopping feed possible. Then you have your product's price point, including shipping. So you want to have ideally the cheapest price, including shipping. And then there's just your CPC, your bid, what you pay for a click, right? Especially if you're going to do standard shopping. Some people want to go to the days where bids on shopping used to be 50 cents. Well, most bids on shopping today are probably like 80 cents, a dollar, sometimes $2. Right. So making sure you've got a competitive bid to get in your shopping ads is really important. So looking at those three things, your shopping feed, your bid, and your product price is how you determine rank in these days. And that's probably not going to change because Google really wants to build an Amazon type marketplace. And we all know that Amazon is all about the cheapest price at the end of the day.
Exactly. So to Dwayne's point, not confirmed by Google, but you pretty much have this decided, and I know how those gut feelings work because they're usually right based upon the data. Right. Make sure that if you want to be competitive, look at your price, your product price, plus the shipping price compared to your competition. And basically you're going to want to come in below what your competition's shopping, your product and shipping price together is. And that's when you can do things like add a little bit to it, add free shipping. Google sees it as being this, and then how it works psychologically with the customer at the end of the day, everything else. And then of course, make sure you get it there quickly because Google is going to track how long it actually takes to get to the customer's address. Mark followed up and said a few dealers will ship, but usually just used. They're not going to ship something that's new. That makes sense.
Yeah.
To me. I had another question come in from Fabrizio asking, is it feasible selling services using Google Shopping? Are there any options within Google Shopping to sell services?
I've heard whispers from some B2B friends that they've done some testing with Google from like a B2B service perspective, but currently there isn't any official announcement, as far as I know anyways, where you can do services, but I can see that happening in the future. Mm-hmm. At least for right now, there is not, unfortunately.
Got you. And here's a question for you. Over the course of the past year, a lot of spaces that used to traditionally be transactional results have become informational results, right? Your money, your life, health, a lot of things like in the hemp space, a lot of spaces, even to a degree, the lingerie or adult entertainment space, which used to be transactional products, is now informational. So it's serving like magazine articles, and all those magazine articles are like, hey, the X best products to help you sleep, or the X best products to help you do this. And all of those are affiliate links, right? So, and then Google's serving shopping ads. Now, one thing I've noticed is within those informational results in organics, I think Google calls it stores, or sometimes popular products will show up, but then there's also been one called shops or stores. Are you familiar with that insert? And do you know if that's being powered by Google Merchant Center or not?
I assume it's being powered by Merchant Center because there's no other place for them to really get the data unless it's from the manufacturer center. You know, I think that's like an interesting thing people have talked about the last couple weeks is Google inserting what looks like a shopping ad, you know, farther below organic results or informational searches. But I have not seen a lot written about it. So I only have assumed at this point that it's from GMC or at the very least manufacturer center, because it's the only two places they'd probably get the data from where they have enough of the data without having to crawl people's websites.
Gotcha. Okay. Awesome. Well, where can folks find you online, Dwayne?
Yeah. I mean, I spend a lot of time on Twitter. So just Dwayne Brown on Twitter. I spend a fair amount of time on Reddit and on the PPC subthread, which I'm just Fathom53 on there. And then beyond those two things, I try to spend a lot of time off the internet as much as I can. So I read a lot. I travel a fair bit. I've been to 40 countries. 'Cause I'm sure, like, yeah, 40 countries learn. I'm sure like you, I spend a lot of time in front of the computer for work. So I try to like have non-screen time as much as I can.
What are some of your favorite countries that you've been to?
I mean, I love New Zealand. If anyone's not been, I highly recommend it. Yeah, especially for the outdoors and just like the really nice people. The food is really good down there. I didn't think I'd like Amsterdam as a city, but I liked Amsterdam a lot. If you're into Asia, there's a country called Laos, which is really nice. It's sort of between Thailand and Vietnam. That's a really great country as well.
Did you go to, I'm sorry, the name of the temple is escaping me.
But yes, yeah, I went to the temple. Yes. I've done most of the things in Laos because I like it as a country a lot. Hong Kong is really great as well. Bali's obviously nice if you're into beaches and just kind of getting some sun and stuff like that. So there's a lot of great countries out there. And travel is my big thing when I'm not, you know, working and helping clients just do a better job.
Awesome. And what else about yourself? What are some of your hobbies besides travel and food?
Yeah, I mean, I read a lot of mystery books. It's how I try to like unwind. And when I was a little kid, I wanted to be like a secret agent and a spy. So that's, I think, why I liked mystery books a lot, because it's like, who did it? Why did they do it? Solve things. I like chess, I like strategy things as well, which is probably why I like mystery books. And then I moved back to Toronto actually just last year. And I bought a bicycle last year because I haven't had one for a couple years. And so I spent a lot of my time in spring and summer just on my bike and just like biking around the city and just kind of hanging out and taking pictures of things that either have changed or are new since I've been away for the last few years from Toronto. So when I'm not working, it's pretty much either traveling somewhere new, checking out a restaurant on my bicycle, or I'm potentially just reading a book and trying to like not think about work.
And I'm sorry, I had Laos and Cambodia mixed up in my head when you had mentioned that. So I was thinking of Angkor Wat in Cambodia, not Laos.
I've also been there, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, oh, yeah. It's a nice temple.
I've not been to Cambodia. I have been to Thailand. And by mistake on a boat trip, we were in Thailand and we ended up in Malaysia. which apparently is really easy to do and happens all the time. So that was a lot of fun. What kind of history are you into?
Usually when I go to cities, I try to visit like a history museum to see like how the city developed. Like when I went to Asia in 2014, I'd never been to Asia. And so I did about 12 countries over 3 months. So each city, I try to go to like the main history museum to learn like how the country developed. And I think one thing I didn't realize is that countries like Japan has given a lot of money to other countries in Asia to help support them through like different wars and things of that nature. So I think learning how countries have developed and gone to where they are is, I think, super fascinating. Because I think in North America, obviously, we get fed a lot of media stuff, and some things we see on the TV is true, but lots of things we see is also not true. And I think spending time in a country and developing an interest in their culture beyond just food. So I go to history museums and just kind of hang out and just wander around and learn about the country I'm going to spend the next 3 days or potentially 3 weeks in.
Yeah, what's amazing to me about Southeast Asia and Europe to an extent is like growing up in the United States, it's so huge, right? And every state's different. And don't get me wrong, there's like different dialects, different ways of speaking, but and there's different languages based upon like, you know, where your ancestors immigrated from, or wherever it may be. But when you're in Southeast Asia, like you're traveling in a relatively small area compared to Canada or the US, and you cross a border and it's like, boom, the language is completely different. Sometimes a lot of the writing is Sanskrit based, or but the writing is sometimes completely different. Typically the religion is the same, but it's different forms. Like as soon as you cross the border, and also like with Europe as well. So yeah, I enjoy that. I enjoy that too. So we can find you on Twitter. We can find, I just dropped a link to takesomerisk.com. Mm-hmm. And do you mind if I drop your LinkedIn as well?
Yeah, you totally drop my LinkedIn. Yeah. I don't spend as much time on LinkedIn as I probably should. I know lots of my other agency friends are like, I spend lots of time on there. I post lots of stuff. But whenever I read LinkedIn, Warren, I'm just like, oh, this feels like the worst kind of content to get served on any social platform.
Your inbox has gotten cleaned up a little bit though, right? Are you getting less inbox spam than you used to?
Less spam for sure, but my feed is not the most delightful experience.
I think everyone's all of a sudden been like, hey, LinkedIn's the sleeping giant. Let's take everything over to LinkedIn. So yes. The inboxes are cleaned up, but the feed's gotten a little bit busy. Dwayne, it's been a pleasure having you on the show today. Thank you so much for sharing your insights on Google Shopping, Google Ads, Google Merchant Center, and Manufacture Center with our audience. Is there anything that you'd like to say or share before we go?
Yeah, I think the last thing really is sometimes brands ask this question, so I think it's kind of interesting. You know, when it comes to shopping ads, you know, you want to run your shopping ads, but you also want to run your search ads and test them out. It isn't shopping or search, it's shopping and search if you get them both to work. Because if you can get them both to work, you'll take up more search and result page real estate, which means you have a better chance of, you know, crowding out your competition, which is always good for your business because that means you get the click potentially and get the sale.
100%. It all works together, right?
Yeah.
Work with Google, not against it, right?
As much as you can.
As much as possible. So that's our final tip for the day. Thanks again, Dwayne. Thanks so much. Thanks for all of our live viewers who have viewed today, and to all of you who are listening, and again to our sponsors and partners at InMotion Hosting. This has been Lauren Baker and Dwayne Brown from Take Some Risk Incorporated on the Search Engine Journal show today. So have a good day.